Well, for most of the tech net, you were fine. You were like full quiet, except at the very beginning. And now it's like back to 30% noise as it was in the beginning. I think we had this discussion with Mike a month or two ago, and he suggested around a toroid core, whether it be 31 or 43, just 6 or 7 turns would suffice for a common mode choke. Mike, if you're still around, isn't that the case?
Well, I guess perhaps he stepped away. Yes, that's what he said, and I agree with him. If you increase the number of clamps on a cable, it increases the impedance linearly. In other words, if you have one ferrite clamp on the coax and you add a second one, it presents as twice the impedance as original. If you put 4 clamped ferrites, it's 4 times the original single one. If you loop them, though, you get a square function. So if you loop a coax, say, 6 times around the toroid ferrite, you get 6 squared, which is 36 times the impedance, which is more than enough. So the biggest bang for your buck, if you can do it, is a coiled toroid.
Well, I have, I think, 3 or 4 of each 43 and the 31. I think I'm going to have to make a couple different ones and play with this. I appreciate the feedback.
Yeah, sure. Part of this is experimentation, so feel free to experiment and scribble down your findings and come back here and share them with us. I would love to hear about it.
Absolutely. Thank you all. Back to that.
Okay, very good. So once again, I am ACCGS. And my name is Roy, and this is the Limewire Technical Net. We still have a little time left if someone has a question or a topic or a comment. So if you do, hit that push to talk and say your piece.
KC2FHM Net Control, this is November 2, Victor Hotel Zulu Mobile in South Dakota with a comment.
Okay, John recognized over an IRLP, and 10, I didn't see 8 out of 10 meters that today. Were you doing something else, or was it just propagation today?
Okay, hello, this is Ken out here in South Dakota on Echo Link Mobile. I'm about 20, 30 miles south of Rapid City, headed back down to the Indian Reservation. I got about another 100-mile drive to go. So I wanted to say, as a report of propagation, it seems the pipeline between West and South Dakota and East Coast is closed. The past couple of weeks, it seems like there's no stable propagation either on a 10 meters or any other band between the East Coast and where I live out here in Western South Dakota on any mode, FM, SFP, DW, or anything. But unusual enough, it is a chance in Europe, UK, Asia, and so forth. So even during the daylight hours, I'm able to get Australia and Asia very strong, and into Europe, and occasionally on 10 meters FM, which is very unusual. But the FM repeaters on the East Coast and the FM chit-chat and the SSB chit-chat, that seems to be closed and over and out for a while now, a couple of weeks. So, yes, I'm not able to hear the net anymore. The last couple of contests, that was the end of it for me. I couldn't hear anybody on the East Coast. That's what I can say about that. I listen religiously, but I'm not able to be able to hear you guys anymore because of the propagation. I'm sorry about that. But I'm here, and I just wanted to say hello. Back to that control. This is SCP-8 Mobile. Back to ACP.
I appreciate it. I'm sorry to hear that you can't hear us, but I'm glad to hear that you're reaching other places. 2 weeks ago, I mentioned on the TechNet here that I spoke to Namibia. That's above, right above the South Africa, on the west coast of the African continent. I talked today to Colorado, Texas, Mexico, but no one in Nebraska, no one in South Dakota. So, you know, the gods of propagation are fickle, but so hopefully they'll let us communicate again in future 10-meter nets. Today it was a crazy house with the CQ contest. The entire band was hopping with people playing dead with each other. So I'm sorry that you can't make the 10 meters into New York, but I hope you're able to in the future.
Yeah, thank you for the nice words. It's okay. And the other adjoining reservation is called the Rosebud. As I had mentioned before, the reservation I'm at is called the Pine Ridge. You know, it's made famous for the tribe of Joe Custer. You know, it's the size of Connecticut. And it's very lonely, though. I'm the only ham out here. So another government employee took interest in a hobby, and he became licensed and quickly became a general class. So he's in the Rosebud, which joins ours. These two reservations make up the bottom third of South Dakota. So he's exactly 100 miles east of me. And with his equipment, he went out and bought a nice, that new Yaesu radio that they came out with, that hybrid, half, you know, half DSP and half Super Heterodyne radio, and he's putting up a small antenna for HF, and he's getting on the bands and stuff over in the Rosebud, and he is the only other ham in the Rosebud reservation that's active. Rosebud is half the size of the reservation I'm at. So there are two hams out here now on the Indian reservation, one in Rosebud, one in Pine Ridge. And, but unfortunately he and I cannot speak to each other because of the distance. Too far for you to be HF and too close for HF. But I'm trying to get him on EchoLink, so let's see what happens. He's getting up on EchoLink, and maybe both Houston, he and I have comms with each other that way. So we got one ham on one and one ham on the other. So the activity is a flurry, but it's going. And the weather report out here is quite fickle, just like propagation. I'm out in the front yard playing with a dog with T-shirt on, and nice, breezy, and cool, and pleasant. We drive 10 miles away to my other property in Nebraska, and we got caught in a blizzard an hour later. And we were trapped in my house last night during the 7-inch snowfall and couldn't make it back. And we ran back to the radio this morning up in the Pine Ridge Reservation just to hear that CQ contest. So, you know, out here it's bright, sunny, 40 miles away, it's a blizzard. So, you know, out here the weather, you can see four seasons in one day. It's quite weird, you know. So, you know, this is one of those places you don't want to come out here unless you want to carry a snow shovel in your overnight bag. So, it's kind of a weird place. Just to give everybody a report of how it is in South Dakota and Nebraska. All right, I'll hand it back to that control, and that's the report from the High Plains. This is S2BHD out.
Okay, very good, Ken. I'm a little curious. You may not know, but I'll ask nevertheless. The other gentleman, I have the sense that there's such a low population density out there. Did he get his in person, or did he get it online? This is a real big movement among the ARRL and the other CE providers for online testing. So I'm a little curious, Ken.
Okay, good question. I'm a VE for both W5YI and ARRL. And I had said to him, just do it online, you know. He says, no, he's going to try to seek out the, for some reason, he found the hot spring, which is about 100 miles north of us, club. They came together from him. It's only 60 miles north of me at the pro club. And he found the club. They keep me. And they collectively had quite a few people to come together, and he did it in person. And he did it twice. He did tech, waited a few months, and then he did general in person twice. And the answer is in person, believe it or not. And I suggest you do it, but, you know, interestingly enough, I also give the commercial license. I'm a test proctor for this company called CE, and I have given more of the commercial licenses than I have ever given for the amateur license, because people out here, it's more of a high demand for the commercial license than it is for the amateur license, because it's a job requirement. It's very difficult to find commercial license, so I had given maybe I've licensed a couple of hundred people in commercial license, the GROL. But he went and found people up in Hot Springs, South Dakota, and interestingly enough, just seeing a little commercial in Hot Springs. Hot Springs is where they find a lot of the woolly mammoths buried, you know, for millions of years ago. That's that level of sediment where apparently they all collected and they all got buried there in Hot Springs, South Dakota. Big tourist attraction up there. Back to that control.
AC2GS. Well, very good. Thank you. That's surprising, but that's great. I could understand why there's a much bigger demand for commercial license, because it's a job thing. Amateur radio is fun, but it's still just a hobby. I'm a VE, but I don't think I've ever, I have never given commercial exams. These are all just amateur in person before COVID, and now after COVID, there's a big push towards online gentlemen and VEs about taking a technician's exam in Brooklyn, and I gave him a couple of options, and I included hamstudy.org. You go on that website, and there are online testing available every day of the week. If you want to be tested for a technician's license in 2 hours, most likely you can find a place that will accept your request and let you test on your computer. So I think that's the future. It certainly seems the way the ARRL is pushing it. So I think online is becoming more and more the thing. But it's good to hear that your friend was motivated enough to get to his car and find an actual location to take the test.
VHC coming.
Yep.
It's so interesting listening to Ken out there, because I just recently went through all of the things he's talking about. I use that word. The country out there is so truly amazing. There's a comment that radio is the antithesis of social distancing. Physically distant, socially close, physically distant, and I as I hear about the testing done on over the internet, I thought something. Anyway, it's really neat to hear from that point. Back to that.
Change and you're able to once again check into the 10 meter net. So thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thank you all for the nice words. I'll extend gratitude to everybody. Anybody that comes out here that thinks about coming out here, that wants to come out and look at Mount Rushmore, the power or something, you look up on QRZ NQPH-NQPH-0. If you look at my email, my name is michelle.com, write me an email tell me when you're going to come out. I'll meet you. And I will give you a personal tour. You can follow me in your rental car, your RV. I'll take you in my Jeep. And I'll give you a personal tour, first-hand tour of the reservation. It'll take a day, and the Badlands, as you would never see before, as you wouldn't believe, including on the radio. I'll let you operate my station, and you'll have first-hand knowledge of what I'm talking to you about. I'll take you to my government quarters. I'll take you to the facility that you paid for. And I'll let you see where you invested your tax money. And you'll leave with a warm feeling that your money was well invested. And these native people out here, you'll say, wow, I really feel like I've invested my money well, you know. So I personally will extend, you know, a hand out to anybody that hears this on my part, you know. So that invitation stands as long as until I retire in a couple of years. Okay, I'll leave that close to 673. 73, Land 2 VHC, back in that control.
Okay, 73, Ken, and I hope someone takes you up on that, brings the camera, and records it. Maybe we could put it on Limark's YouTube channel. So have a great weekend, and hopefully I'll talk to you again down the line, either via 10 meters or via Echo Link.
Okay, 73. Nope.
73, Ken. John, KC2SHO, you wanted to say something?
Well, I have a question for the net, but if you want to shoot on time, I can save it for next week.
Yeah, it's already almost 10:20. I don't want to make a Paul's SpaceNet report too short. I'd appreciate it if we could put it on hold until next week.
Hey, well, I don't have all that much. Why don't you take John's question?
Okay, Paul has spoken. What's your question, John?
All has spoken. On the subject of toroids, I think, like a lot of us, I would assume, if you're like me, every time you see a toroid, you cut it out, you rip it out of wherever you find it, and you stick it in a bin. We love these things. I love these toroids all the time. I've been doing it since I was a lowly little CB operator back in the day, keeping the CB interference out of my band. CB was when I first started to learn about these things. But I've often thought, wouldn't it be nice to test them and see what their parameters are? Is that possible? I thought about maybe there's a way I could do it with my network analyzer. Maybe it would take more than that. Maybe you can only get certain parts. Look it up and read about it, but your discussion tonight reminded me that it's been something that's been on my mind. Occasionally, how we can determine what we have. What are these things that are sticking in the bin? Sometimes I even wonder if some of them are more iron core. They look like it, so I'd like to be able to test that. What have you got?
Okay, I'll be happy to put in my two cents and ask the other people around. There are a lot of different characteristics for ferrites. Principally, the most important when most people think of them is their permeability, and that translates into you know, how many coils, how much of a coiled wire will produce a reactant. So theoretically, if you have a standardized way of testing the induced inductance, you can fathom the permeability. I think that's the easiest thing to do. Another thing that you might be able to do is you can tell what the general resistance of the material is by making sure that if there's a painted layer, you can penetrate through it, and you get a reading of the resistance. It might be a ballpark idea. There are other things that are very important that I don't know how you easily can figure out. I have different ferrites have different saturation points and different frequencies. I guess theoretically how the permeability changes due to the shift in frequency, you might be able to trace it back to what type it is. Ultimately, you know, probably the best thing is to kind of wander through YouTube such about, you know, how do you find what type mix your ferrites are. And they do have different qualities, and I've noticed this because I have a few different mixes. One of them, when you split the material, has a very metallic appearance, while others, when you split them, it's a dull gray beige kind of color. So just on appearance, you might be able to tell the difference between one group of ferrites and another. If anyone else has any greater words of wisdom, then please feel free to add on.
Real good. Similar things to what I thought. But I've also thought about, you know, making a little jig with the network analyzer and a piece of coax and maybe measuring properties that way. I've also thought about using the LCR meter to see if that can tell me anything, a single wrap or something like that, and see some different frequencies. I don't know. Again, I think you're right, going digging deeper into like YouTube and those types of things would be helpful. But also, I think maybe the typical one you're going to find on a computer data cable or a power wire, are they all going to be the same mix? You know, or generally the manufacturers are trying to keep, or I should say, when the manufacturers are trying to keep these unwanted signals out of their equipment, are they usually using the same mix? Are all of these recovered ferrites pretty much going to be the same thing? Go ahead.
Okay, 2 points. One, you probably will be able to extract a little bit more information using a VNS, a VNA than an LCR, simply because you'll be able to get a better feel for how the permeability shifts in relation to the frequency. The impedances will shift as a function of frequency, but also as a function of the variable nature of the permeability of the given material. That's one. Number two is I would probably be willing to bet you anything that not all of the ferrites in your collection are the same type for sundry reasons. I think sometimes it's just availability, sometimes it's the cost of the coin, and sometimes they get a good deal on, you know, 10,000 units or something. So I'd be willing to bet that although the majority might tend to be a particular type, that you will see a degree of variation in your collection.
Real good and fun subject. I appreciate the input, and maybe I'll dig into it deeper and report back and tell you what I find and see what I can do. I have good test equipment. been available to me at home and at work, so it could be fun to learn more about this and see what I can find out. Also, with the Ballon discussion earlier, just since I've been listening to the archives, a reminder that there, I think it was the 2006, maybe November, something like that, KQRIW said this is one of the most complicated subjects of transmission line theory, so it's a deep one. Thanks for everything. Thanks for hosting, and I'm looking forward to hearing the space report. 73 for now, unless you got more or you want to go on about it, I'll be here listening. EC2GS and the rest of the Landmark TechNet. This is KC2SHO, John, in Los Alamos, New Mexico.
You're welcome, John. I look forward to hearing your results. I think most technical aspects are kind of like onions. You know, the simplest answer is the least accurate one, and if you peel the one layer off, it gets a little bit closer to the real thing, and you peel another one, it gets a little bit more, and transmission line theory is you know, you can teach your graduate level series of courses on that subject, but yeah, all these things are much more complicated than we make them sound. Because if we made them sound this complicated, we wouldn't understand what we were talking about ourselves. So thank you very much, John, for participating. I think you had a good question, a good topic, and I hope we hear more about it in the future. Okay, this is AC2GS with the Landmark Technical Net. I hope you found the first segment informative and entertaining. I'm sure you will find the next segment equally, if not more, informative and entertaining. And so I give you the SpaceNet report with our own full WS2S.
That's Roy, AQ2GS, WS2N, for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. Okay, a couple of upcoming events that I'll be paying attention to will be an announcement by the Canadian Space Agency as well as NASA together. They're going to make an announcement on the names of the four astronauts that will be going on Artemis II. The Artemis II mission will the crewed mission in the launch to and around the moon, orbit the moon and come on back to Earth. It'll be a 10-day mission, and the names will be will be released on NASA TV, actually on April 3rd, which is the following Monday, not next. Yeah, April 3rd, it's at 11 a.m. they're going to make that announcement. So I'll be curious to find out who will be going, and they'll have the backup crew names as well. So, things are moving along. They predict by the end of 2024, after that, roughly a year or so after that, you'll have Artemis 3, and that right now it's on the boat. That's the mission that will actually be one. But after that, might have timed it out. Event that will take place will be actually this week on Tuesday, a couple of days from now. We have the Soyuz 2 crewed spacecraft return to Soyuz vehicle when it went up. It's up.
That means white rabbit in Japanese.
The Asians years ago used to, you know, when you look at the moon, we see man in the moon, they saw a rabbit, a white rabbit. Anyway, this company is a private company called iSpace, located in Japan, and it's built this lander with four legs, and they go land on the moon, and on board they also have a small rover. The small rover is built by the UAE, the United Arab Emirates. So hopefully this thing will get there. The reason I bring it up today is a couple of days ago, it finally went into orbit around the moon. It takes a long time for this vehicle to get to where it is, to orbit the moon, launch in December. It goes all the way out, roughly a million miles away from Earth, which is like four times the distance, you know, for going to the moon. Gets out to roughly the L1 position, slows down, and then starts to get pulled back with Earth's gravity and with the moon's gravity. So over all this time, all these months, finally started to come back, and now it just gets close enough to the moon, and everything is timed just right. It goes into orbit around the moon. That's what it just did. So it's now successfully in orbit, and they plan on landing in, it looks like, late April. So they're orbiting now, and we'll see how they do. I put a picture of what this spacecraft looks like as it's sitting on the moon, a rendering of what it would look like. And I put it on Dr. Roy's website. But inside the spacecraft, they have a small rover, like I said, made by United Arab Emirates. That's going to drive around. And it also has a camera on board. Sure, it's going to take a picture of the lander. And sure, hopefully the picture comes out equal to or better than the picture that's on Roy's website. When they do that, I'll put one up and side by side. This company's a private company. It'll be the first private company to actually land on the moon. A couple of other companies, of course, are trying it, but this will be a first. It should be, pretty interesting. And they're not fooling around. They plan on launching, many of these things eventually. There's a two and a three already in the works. So we'll see how Japan with these landers. We have our landers that are going up, after a while it's going to start to get crowded up there. Ones we're sending are probably going to land on the south, near the south pole of the moon. This one is going to land in the northeast portion of the moon. Yeah, call it Atlas Crater, near Mare Pegoris, which is roughly, I believe that was an Apollo 13 destination. Of course, they didn't make it there. That was the one that got into trouble and was unable to complete that mission. But anyway, this will be the first private company to succeed in landing somewhere on the moon, which will, I'm sure that's definitely going to make news. And the idea for this company is to eventually supply materials for NASA. They'll send whatever's needed once you start to develop a base on the moon. They're going to need supplies from many companies, including this one. This will be just one of those supply companies. Any comments? Okay, last Wednesday after the computer test, supposed to launch a brand new rocket at 10 o'clock tonight. And this rocket is called Taran 1, and it was by Relativity. And the reason I was following this, I've mentioned this on the net before, is because this will be, or in this case, it was the first 3D printed vehicle, the whole vehicle. You know, engine, the body of the rocket, completely 3D printed. It's 85%. Anyway, they thought it could make it fourth launch pad, that would be a success to prove the viability, the strength of a 3D printed rocket. They had the biggest additive manufacturing machine ever in the world make this thing. They made it out of like long barrels, and I guess they eventually welded these aluminum barrels together, and that formed the structure of the rocket. It was over 100 feet tall, and sure enough, got off the launch pad a little late. There was a boat out in the water near Florida, so that's late. And once they got the boat cleared, they got down to zero, and it took off. Naturally, this company is very happy. They tried it 2 weeks before, and they got down to zero, and the computer shut it down, and it didn't take off. It was aborted. This time, everything went smoothly. Took off. The goal was to go into 175-mile orbit, a relatively low orbit, and it got up through maximum Q, which was very important. Just to get off the launch pad was very important. They said if we make it through maximum Q, we're going to consider it a success, which they did. That was roughly two and a half minutes, and then another 2 minutes went by, and they separated the second stage from the first stage. It looked like the first stage was igniting. The second stage was igniting, then it putted out. So that stage eventually failed. But people at Relativity, very happy. Again, this is a private company. Working to get this developed. And they said 2017 they started. And the other important information about this rocket was not only the additive manufacturing of it, but it was the fuel. The fuel was liquid methane, liquid oxygen. Many companies have been trying to do that recently and failed. China failed recently. SpaceX has tried it with their Starship. They've gotten up to 6 miles and came back down. Their last try, of course, they landed successfully. But none of them made it through maximum fuel. None of them actually made it to space. This one did. So that's a record. And, you know what, I watched the plane go up. You can see it perfectly. The nine engines, they call them Aeon 1 engines. That's the name of it. That they gave their engines. Well, again, all 3D printed. But you can see the nine engines, the doors perfectly round blue flames. Blue flames. So it's different than a regular launch. It looks real good. So we'll see more from Relativity. Their goal is to continue to develop this Taran 1. But they've already started building the Taran R for reusability. They want to do similar to what SpaceX does, launch a rocket, have it come back, have the booster come back, land vertically. They want to go one step further than what SpaceX does. They're going to launch the rocket in the second stage. You know, it's going to do its job, release its satellites, whatever. But then that's going to return from 17,500 miles an hour. And it's got aerodynamics built into it. And the idea is to eventually bring that one back down as well. So it will be a fully reusable spacecraft and rocket. And that will be the main goal is to put large satellites in space too. This is going to be equal in size, equal in thrust, equal in payload capability to the Falcon 9 rocket that SpaceX launches like every other day now. So competition is out there, and I wish them well. I hope they continue on. We're off to a good start anyway. The name of that company is Relativity. Any questions? WS Blast. Okay. NASA's making headway with their building of the Artemis 2 rocket anyway. They've got most of their pieces put together. You know, they have their core stage now and adapted to the engine section. The second stage is also in good shape. So it's only a matter of time before we start assembling this, and this vehicle assembly, along with the two solid booster rockets that go with it, they're all ready to go as well. Let's start assembling it. Eventually, you have the core, the engine section, you'll have the second stage, then you'll have the Artemis II vehicle, which consists of the crew vehicle, which will carry the four people that they're going to name on April 3rd. And then they're going to, behind that is the service module, almost completed, also by the European Space Agency. They're responsible for that part of it. And you have, Northrop Grumman. Developing the, or completing the, they call it the LAS launch board system, which consists of a couple of solid booster rockets that are attached to the top of the spacecraft, and that would pull the crew away to safety. You got that company involved as well. Before you know it, I imagine this year will be up, or next year will be up. By that time, they should be ready to send a crew up at the end of next year. Any comments? Okay, I've been talking about Ingenuity in a while. That's the helicopter with the two big 4-foot-long blades that's flying around on Mars on a regular basis. Launched in July 2020 with the Perseverance rover. The rover was very successful, riding around with its nuclear-powered RTG, the radioisotope thermoelectric generator. Not solar-powered, it's doing well. But on the bottom of Perseverance, when it landed, in the following year, in 2021, in February, where they checked everything out, and one of the earliest things that they did once they knew Perseverance was in good shape was to disconnect Ingenuity from the bottom of the, from the belly of the rover. So, you know, they release different connecting bolts, you know, pyrotechnic bolts, whatever they needed to do to actually release the vehicle. It's bolted down on a hinge, and then they eventually dropped it. Dropped down roughly a foot, landed on its four legs. Perseverance rolled out of the way and left the helicopter just sitting there. The people that built this were hoping that they could get maybe three, four, hoping for five flights out of Ingenuity. Well, the first one went well. Second one went straight up, came down, and then they tried to see how it would do on a transition. It went up, went one direction, eventually came back, landed straight down. They said, this is going well. They kept extending. They now fly for, you know, 2 solid minutes. They would go further and further. They would also go faster and faster. They could adjust the speed of this thing. And two cameras on board, one like a navigation camera, so it knows, you know, where it is, above, you know, how far above the ground, and, you know, so it's very careful when it lands. And they have a color camera looking straight out, taking pictures of Perseverance on Mars, taking pictures of recently Sun. Yeah, Horizon on Mars, and it's been doing one flight after the other, you know, just recently, a couple of days ago. They're now up to the 45th mission, 45th flight of Ingenuity. They were hoping for five, they got 45, and it's still flying. It's solar powered, got this rectangular solar panel thing on top of the blade, and every time it lands, it sits there and recharges. Off it goes. It's really incredible. Such a success that in the near future, they plan on building two more of these things. It's a figure. And they plan on eventually sending these two helicopters up with a rover that will go to Mars. The idea is to eventually return all these samples, 41 samples, and have Perseverance laying down on the ground to place on Mars. So they can either have Perseverance or a new rover go out and get it, or they could launch one of these helicopters, and they'll send two. You can take a helicopter, fly it over to where one of the samples were made, pick it up, and they can actually bring it back to the craft, you know, the return vehicle. Return vehicle is a solid rocket, two-stage solid rocket that's going to be brought up with two helicopters. And they'll put all these samples into the front of that vehicle, close it all up, and they'll launch the return vehicle to orbit around Mars. And eventually meet up with the European Space Agency. Will have normal going around Mars, orbiting Mars, and stop with that. Now we'll have enough fuel to push it back to Earth. Eventually it will land in the Utah desert. So it's an ambitious project to do. First part of it's really underway. The Perseverance has already dug up samples from my Mars. Helicopters have been flying around. That's proven itself. When they go up with this other launch, they'll have two helicopters. They'll be able to pick up samples. And that's if they need them. They might have it where either Perseverance or the Fetch rover goes and gets those samples. Anyway, those options are still open. What I've been reading. Any comments?
Okay.
Nothing heard. South Korea launched a vehicle. They've launched rockets before, but they also want to be able to use another rocket, another launch complex that's closer to the equator. Closer to the equator, the better extra push you get because, you know, of the equator, you're going to get maybe 1,000 mile an hour head start. So you can put heavier payloads in space. But they made a deal with Brazil to try to start launching rockets from their launch facility. It's called Alcantara. Alcantara is a launch complex developed by Brazil many years ago. They've never successfully sent a rocket into orbit yet. They tried. Brazil tried. So about 20 years ago, they had a rocket that was planned on the first one that was going to actually go into orbit. And they had crews working down there. And for some reason, one of the solid boosters ignited and killed 23 people. And that shut down their space program for the next couple of decades. Now along comes South Korea, and they said, do you mind if we use your launch complex? And sure enough, they did it. They started off with a suborbital flight, which was successful. Since that was successful, they plan on eventually launching larger rockets eventually get into orbit. So then they'll have two capabilities to launch areas that they can go to, either Brazil or in their home of South Korea. They have a launch facility there as well. Any comments? It's WS.
That time complete.
That time is complete. Okay, not much more except for planet alignment that they've been talking about on a couple of different websites. They talk about Mercury, Venus, Mars, Uranus, and the Moon all being roughly in the same place at the same time. Anyway, if you go out at night, just at dusk, right after the sun sets, you can probably see all four of these things. Mercury, forget it. I mean, I've tried to look at Mercury. It's so close to the sun, you have to look at it like right after the sun sets. I mean, you know, that's really tough. You really need good atmospheric conditions for that. So I've never done that. But anyway, people who listen to us that have good atmospheric conditions. I live on Long Island. We have light pollution here. If you go out to South Dakota or Nebraska, they don't have any light pollution. That would be good. And Mars will be the red one. You'll be able to see that. They're coming very close to one another. And this happens every now and then. Any comments for the TechNet? This is WS. Okay, I made it to the witching hour. Anyway, we're going to turn it over to you, Roy. We'll be on tomorrow night on the Club Info.net, followed by the Flop and Chop, followed by this line. And, of course, this month at 5, Wednesday's in it. On Wednesday, they'll have the Nostalgia Net. I would find that interesting. Roy, over to you. AC2GS, WS2N. For the Space Net Report for the TechNet.
Okay, Paul, this is AC2GS,
Thank you, Paul, for the Spacehead report. Thank you for all that you do for us here on the Technical Net and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it. I especially appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thanks to everyone who participated tonight. I hope you learned a few things. I hope it caused a few of the comments.